to the University of Illinois at Chicago Center's podcast series on participatory action research, also known as PAR. This methodological approach involves researchers working collaboratively with people whose lives are affected by the topic being studied. Together, they choose the research questions, decide how to gather and analyze data, and disseminate the results to a wide variety of audiences. Our series features people with lived experience of mental health conditions, sharing strategies that promote inclusion in all stages of inquiry. Join us to learn more about the value and impact of PAR on translating evidence into action.
Thanks for joining our PAR podcast series. Today, we will be discussing the roles that people with lived experience of mental health conditions play in a unique study of peer health navigation services in a large community mental health program in Chicago. I'm joined by Dr. Patrick Corrigan, a well-known and highly respected mental health services researcher who is a distinguished professor of psychology at the Illinois Institute of Technology. Also with me is Paul Williams, a research assistant with lived experience working in Dr. Corrigan's Chicago Health Disparities Center at the Illinois Institute of Technology. Let's get started. Pat, would you give us an overview of the Peer Health Navigator study we'll be discussing today and how it uses the PAR approach?
Well, Kelsey, people with serious mental illness unfortunately get sick and die 10 to 20 years younger than other people. Part of that might represent their difficulty in managing behaviors that would serve them well. But a lot of that represents health inequities that reflect trying to have one's health needs met in a fragmented healthcare system. So think about the challenges of managing your health in Chicago. If you had a respiratory problem, you have to go to the county hospital on the west side, then up to the north side to see the podiatrist, then downtown to get your meds, and then back up to the north side to see your psychiatrist. And peer health navigators, well, health navigators are people whose job is literally to walk the individual around the healthcare system should the individual want it. So health navigators would be somebody that would help the person get an appointment at the county hospital and then take them to the appointment at the county hospital and wait with them in the waiting room. And if the person wanted, go in to see the doctor and then get on the L and go to the North Shore to see the podiatrist and then come back downtown. So it's a very practical effort to walk people around the healthcare system. Peer health navigators are people with lived experience, people who have experienced a recovery of serious mental illness, and who, by the way, also might share things like ethnicity, being of color, or neighborhood, living in the same neighborhood. Peer health navigators are hiring peers to provide this health navigator service. So what does PAR offer to it? Well, to be honest, we really need people from the lived community, people like Paul, who can tell us what it's really like to try to get around a place like Chicago to meet all these different kinds of needs, given the kinds of pressures and challenges of living in the city. And so that's why we put together a PAR team like Paul and another 8 people who are joining us on this kind of effort.
Thanks, Pat. Paul, how did you come to be involved in the study?
Well, I worked with IIT for 7 years on different studies. And one of them was on health and weight management among African-American with lived experience, mental health issues. So working on a peer health navigator study was only a natural fit for me.
Thank you. Paul, would you describe some of your participatory duties on the study?
Well, sometimes it's like being on job interviews for the team hiring for health navigators, assessing on how well and open they were comfortable with their sharing their thoughts and experiences, and assessing how they built rapport, and pretty much how much they knew about Chicago and the transportation system. Also training the peer health navigators, developing the interview material, along with Novocaine. I have reached over 100-page manual used for the study to focus on health and needs of the people with mental illness. And I sometimes do mock interviews to help the researchers. I've been a hands-on involvement in all aspects in this managed the study.
Thank you, Paul. Pat, would you reflect on why the PAR model was a good fit for this study?
Well, let me put it in perspective. I've been doing research for 30 years, and I've published my fair share of journal articles and books and know a lot about this kind of stuff. And so I could sit down in my office and wrap out a study really quickly. But here's the reality. I'm a white guy who lives in the suburbs. What do I know what the experience is like actually living in the city, in this very diverse city with all of its challenges, and what it means in real life to do it? And so participatory action research not only starts with the issue of empowering people with mental illness to make sure we get their perspective on what we're doing, but again, to recognize these people often are ethnically diverse, perhaps challenged by such important issues as poverty or health and housing instability or food insecurities, or perhaps involved in the criminal justice system. Those are realities that challenge people as they're trying to deal with their health. And so we try to put together a PAR team that will make sure we develop an intervention that reflects that perspective.
I'd like to hear from both of you for the next question. What have you done to ensure that PAR works well for your study? Paul, how about you go first?
Start with a level playing field. Everyone's an expert on something. Everyone's input is important. Every idea is considered and taken seriously. Not every idea is acted upon, but all views are considered. When everybody feels that they can contribute, then people open up. They also become invested in what they want to stick with the study until it ends.
Pat, what are your thoughts on how you've made PAR work so well?
You know, one of the things that surprises me about PAR is I sort of come into this thinking I know exactly how it's going, and I fool myself. I learn with the group as we go. I sort of agree with what Paul just said. The group becomes a bit of a family. We develop some sort of cohesion. We get to know each other. We get to trust each other. So we're willing to flip ideas out onto the table to sort of try them out, see if they make sense. Doing good PAR is a lot of upfront work. So at the end of the day, we're trying to build partners, not research participants. I think the typical experience of people with serious mental illness when researchers come around is that they're supposed to be passive and the researcher is going to ask them questions. And so empowering people, encouraging them to speak out, to be in our true partnership is one important challenge. Another thing that PAR does for us is in doing research, there's a fundamental challenge of logistics. So if, in fact, we're going to, for example, come up with a peer health navigator program to help an individual with mental illness go to the west side and north side and downtown to deal with all their health problems, how do you exactly do that? Where does the public health system come in? Where can we use med cards or the like? People with lived experience are out there doing it know really what that means.
The next question is also for both of you. How do you manage the different roles or ways people contribute on a study? Pat, how about you take this one first?
Well, again, what we're focusing on here is a team of people. I would break the team probably into three groups. One is by nature, because it's research, there's scientists in the team who knows the methods and the measures and how to rigorously do things. But what makes this participatory action research is number two is people with lived experience like Paul, who come in and tell us, you know, that might work well in a textbook, but that's not how it plays in the real world. And then the third arm of this that's important are the service providers, because at the end of the day, the PAR team is going to come up with something that we expect service providers to do. You know, given the three sets of us coming at this table, to put together a program has some expectations in it already. One is being very mindful of the doctor role, because although it's probably not appropriate, frequently people come to the table and say, he's the doctor, he's going to tell us what to do. And so the first thing I really need to do is shut up and make sure I don't suppress people's voices so they feel comfortable to tell me anything. And I actually know participatory action research is going well when people on the team first come up with things they never would have thought of, and second come up with things I don't even like, because that's exactly the point. I don't have that lived experience. That said, the participatory action research team has people who may have mental health challenges. And so like anything else, we're hiring them as our partners. We expect to provide reasonable accommodations to them so they can stay involved over the course of the study. And so we will do that. Finally, as our partners, I get paid for my work. And so people with lived experience on the participatory action research team get paid for their work. And so we pay them not only for the meetings, and meetings can be kind of demanding. When we start a project, we'll meet together 90 minutes to 2 hours a week for multiple weeks in a row. This Peer Health Navigator project is for 5 years. We've been together almost a year already. In addition to that, as Paul suggested, we'll need people to go out and do some extra stuff. Paul makes himself available to test run our interviews on our research assistants. So in addition, we need to pay people for that, and we will do that too.
Well, going back to you, Paul, what do you think? How do you help people manage their roles on the study?
Well, it's more or less like I come up with ideas. You know, I try to be open and encourage everybody to be open and speak their mind. You know, it's like the team fosters, like everybody's accepting it, all ideas, everything is on the table and everything is open. You know, nothing is really off limits, you know. What we do is come up with an idea. We did try to work it off. But one of the things I did, you know, it's like also they're very accepting. As for example, I needed to work back up and work in one of our trauma studies in the past. The topic was a trigger for me. So I decided to step away, and nobody in the team made me feel guilty about it, by my second thoughts, and I felt supported. And I tried to learn from that it wasn't for me.
That's really great to hear how your own experience also informs how you work with other people in their roles.
Well, right now I'm currently training somebody else, and pretty much like my part of the training is pretty much sometimes doing role play. Let them learn from experience and from role playing certain roles and certain ideas, and you know, creating characters for them to interact with. Pretty much like a real life environment, you know. They get to interact with somebody who's lived experience. They get the knowledge and the wisdom of somebody who's been through some of the stuff that some of their cares is going to be doing.
Thank you. Pat, I'm wondering if you could speak to the challenges you faced using PAR and how you've overcome them.
I think one of the interesting things is that we're trying to get a group of people together to work. And so it is a bit of work. Again, we meet 2 hours a week in between time. Paul and the team and I, in the last couple of months, revised a 100-page Peer Health Navigator program to reflect the interest of people here. That is a bit of work. We do pay people for their time, but again, it can be a surprising hat for people, because usually the relationship in research is the expectation of the person with mental illness is they're going to be passive and asked a bunch of questions. And we do anything but that. We tell you to tell us the answers, tell us how to fix this kind of thing. Another thing it can be is it can be kind of hot and cold in terms of the amount of work we do. When we start, we tend to be very active, because at startup, we have a lot of decisions about what the intervention is going to be and how are we going to measure it and how do we cover research participant ethical concerns. And then things tend to quiet down a bit. In fact, in terms of the Peer Health Navigator program, Paul and I are in a bit of a quiet down period. And we're going to monthly meetings. Paul and I and the team have a meeting next Tuesday. Even though we're in sort of this recruitment stage, we really need the team to help brainstorm with us how to meet our recruitment goals, because even though it's a great study, we're not meeting, we're not getting everybody into the study we would like to. We also have a training program for the Peer Health Navigators, a program that Paul had a big role in. We need to back up and see whether the Peer Health Navigators who are currently in the field want any additional training.
Paul, what's one thing you'd suggest to others wanting to try the PAR approach?
Knowing from the beginning that you'll get meaningful results from true involvement. So it's worth it, the time and effort you need to put into to facilitate your research. And you get the experience of being part of something bigger than yourself. You get a real sense of accomplishment by doing this. But the challenge is it takes a lot of time and it is a lot of effort into that.
Pat, what do you think next steps might be to encourage broader use of PAR in mental health services research?
Well, I like to come at this from two different angles. One is we need to realize that PAR is the natural next step in the field, in the mental health field, in the recovery-oriented services towards peer-driven interventions. Just as we realize in the work setting, education setting, the health setting, peer providers have a huge value in terms of helping individuals reach their goal. They are in charge. They are empowered to work with the individual. So we need to start the same thing in terms of research. We need to get people with lived experience as our partners in the research. And here's why that's important. It's important when you start a study going into the research, because their years of lived experience help them understand questions that as I, as a scientist sitting behind my books, don't even have a clue exist. And here's why it's important coming out of a study. It's ownership. When we're all done, you don't look at this and say some white guy from the suburbs who don't know a clue about what it means to live in the city came up with this program, because it's not. It's a program of people, of 8 to 10 people with lived experience who are our partners, who grounded this out over time and came up with an intervention we're able to implement. Something else to think about here in talking to the scientists who are listening to this, you might wonder whether PAR is fundamentally biased. I mean, are we really doing research when we're sitting around a table with a bunch of patients who are telling us what the outcomes are? Aren't we really leaning towards and filling in the answers you already expect? Well, let's be clear, that is the nature of all kinds of science. We're doing a study on a drug. A pharmaceutical company is betting up front that drug will work. So if we're doing a study in Peer Health Navigators and we're doing it with peers, we're betting on and trying to develop an intervention that in fact represents their interests with hypotheses that in fact represent good outcomes. So PAR is not a slippery slope, squishy approach to science. It's as rigorous as any kind of hypothetico-deductive method.
Well, thank you both very much. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk about PAR today.
Well, thank you. I want to reiterate something Paul said. I really am moved about doing PAR. I really enjoy our current group meets 10:30 on Tuesdays. It really does make me think that this science is bigger than any one of us. It can be a lot of work. As I said, I can sit in an office and throw some ideas down really fast, as opposed to getting around with a bunch of people like Paul, and Paul's quite willing to tell me whether I got something wrong. But at the end of the day, first, I build these really close family-like relationships with people. And second, we really pound out some important health and science issues.
I'd like to say thank you. And I'd like to also add that I think PAR is worth it, because I think you get better results when more people who live the experience, you know, they go through all the kinks and problems of it before it's implemented. You know, you have people who actually have to live with this and have lived experience from this. And also as a team, what you get out of it, you get a sense of accomplishment. You know, it's nothing better to see something you worked on for the community and everything that's, you know, you get to see it from start to finish. No other thing, it's nothing like it, you know. So you do invest it, you know, you do eventually be investing in the program. And once you're invested in it, you're going to try to do your best about it, you know. And I'd like to see more of these programs if possible. And if you're thinking about doing this, this is it's worth it. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Visit our website for a transcript of this recording and to learn more about the research featured in this podcast. You can obtain additional behavioral health resources, podcasts, and webinars by visiting the Center's website.